Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now, here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now into our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to continue to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here, issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues, gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today as we interview experts for today's show in our December theme on waste and waste generation. We're going to look at the environmental intersection of our consumption-based culture with waste generation. And today, we're going to focus more so on food waste. Now, waste is an unavoidable consequence of human activity that has environmental and significant health impacts. Waste can be categorized into various types, such as municipal solid waste, hazardous waste, industrial waste, agricultural waste, medical waste, radioactive stuff, construction stuff, mining waste, and much, much more. The quantity and quality of waste depends upon different factors such as economic growth, our consumption habits, population size, and waste management practices. Now, generally, though, developed countries such as ours in the U.S. generate much more waste per person than do developing countries, especially in terms of municipal solid waste and industrial waste. Now, waste generation indicates really inefficient use of our resources and materials. Therefore, reducing waste is a key strategy for achieving sustainability and a circular economy. Waste reduction can be achieved by preventing waste generation, by reusing and repairing products, by recycling and composting materials, and recovering energy from waste. And these strategies can also help conserve natural resources, save energy, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and create jobs and value. However, not all waste can be avoided or recovered, and some waste will always need to be disposed of or released into the environment, it appears. The most common methods of waste disposal are landfills, incinerators, and open dumps. And these methods can indeed cause or pose significant environmental and health risk, such as groundwater contamination, air pollution, greenhouse gas emissions, fire hazards, and disease transmission. Therefore, waste disposal requires proper design. It requires a lot of forethought, operation, monitoring, and regulation in order to minimize these negative impacts and to ensure the public's safety. So waste is complex, as we see, but it's also a dynamic issue that requires an integrative as well as holistic solutions. Waste management involves multiple stakeholders, such as governments, businesses, civil society, and we as consumers, and all of us have different roles and responsibilities in this whole waste and waste management cycle. Waste management also requires interdisciplinary and cross-sectional collaboration and innovation, and a lot of education to address the technical, social, economic, and environmental aspects of waste and its attendant issues. So waste management is not only a challenge, but it's also an opportunity, we feel, to create a more sustainable and resilient society. Now, this is a lot, but here today to help us explore and unpack and understand this some more are two experts who are going to make us smarter. Today we have with us Claudia Fabiano. Claudia is the Sustainable Management of Food Team Analyst for the Environmental Protection Agency in Washington. There, she works to help communities prevent wasted food and manages national wasted food data and technical tools. Claudia is also on the board of Washington, D.C.'s Food Recovery Working Group. Welcome, Claudia, and did I get all of that right?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for taking time to join us. Our other guest is Dr. Liz Goodwin. Liz is a senior fellow with the World Resources Institute, who are a big supporter of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. And Liz serves as the chair of the London Waste and Recycling Board there in London, where she lives. A chemist by background, Liz was with the Waste and Resources Action Program as its first director of manufacturing. And in 2015, Liz was awarded the OBE in the Queen's Birthday Honors for services to the business resource efficiency, community, and the environment. Welcome, Liz. And did I get all of that right?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And again, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. I want to start out with you, Liz. Now, many people point to overconsumption as the cause of the waste generation and the waste management problems that are plaguing our environment today. So, Liz, can you talk to us about what you see as the major drivers globally of waste generation and of our waste management problems and issues?
Well, I think, as you said earlier, that the focus is on food waste here, and I think at a household level, the main issues are that we end up buying too much, and then we don't use everything we buy. So those are the main causes at a household level. But in fact, food waste and loss occurs all the way back in the supply chain as well. So manufacturers will have waste that arises when they're doing their operations, right back to the farmer, where there'll be waste at the farm level. So it happens at all points along the supply chain. I think a whole range of issues about why that happens. A lot of it's about awareness, lack of awareness.
Let me ask you this, Liz, though. I hate to disturb you. And Claudia, you can weigh in if you want to. Statistically, though, globally, how do the sources of waste line up? What's number one, number two, and number three?
That depends on the country involved. Globally, it's around a third of all the food that's produced is either lost or wasted somewhere along the supply chain or at our households. For countries like the United States and like Europe, probably the biggest proportion of the waste occurs in our households and less in the supply chain, mainly because we've got fairly well-developed supply chains and there's good controls all the way down those supply chains. And then we get it home and we waste it.
I want our listeners to know, though, is indeed food the major component of waste in the world today, statistically?
I don't think you can say that. Again, that will change in different parts of the world. And not all wastes are equal. You mentioned earlier plastic waste. You know, plastic waste has its own very specific issues associated with it. Food waste has its own specific issues associated with it as well. So I think you can't really compare one waste against another. If you look at total volumes, probably the largest is things like construction waste. But actually, a lot of that might be very inert and not produce greenhouse gas emissions. Whereas food waste, one of the big issues around food waste is if we have food waste and it goes into a landfill, that will produce methane, and that's a very potent greenhouse gas. So that's why some wastes are more significant than others certainly in terms of climate change and greenhouse gas emissions.
Thank you. I just wanted to really filter that out for our listeners, because all this month we're going to be talking about various aspects of waste and waste management. And we chose to start with food because it is such a significant component of our waste stream that indeed, as you just mentioned, contributes to climate change and global warming. So again, thank you for that. And we just have a few more minutes to go for this segment. But continuing along with this, Liz, and I think you mentioned some of them earlier, but I want to make them real clear to our listeners, and that is, what are the specific environmental problems and impacts associated with our waste generation?
So for food waste, it's estimated that food waste contributes around 8-10% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. And that's a huge figure. It's much bigger than aviation. And lots of people worry about getting on planes and flying around. But food waste itself is, 8-10%. That's a huge number. And if we could halve it, that would make a big difference towards tackling greenhouse gas emissions. And the reason it's so much, it's not when you have a piece of, say, burger and you're throwing it away, you don't realize all the impacts that are associated with that burger. So you need to think not just about that thing that you put in the bin that then decomposes in a landfill. You need to think about the resources, the land, and the effort that was used to rear the cow, to process the meat, to transport the meat around the country, to keep it cold, to then cook it, and then you're throwing it away. So actually, the energy that was used and the resources and the land that was used to produce that piece of meat is massive, and then you throw it away. So, but most people, when they're looking at that piece of meat, they don't realise that implication. So that's why you need to think about the whole of the process to actually produce that food in the first place. And that is not just about energy, but it's also land and water and things like that.
Yes, it's a whole food waste stream of its own. Is that correctly? Because I know that you have the various waste streams consisting of food, hazardous waste, and things of that nature. But it's really clear, and I think people need to understand that the whole food waste has its own stream and various issues associated with it, which is why it's so important. Thank you. We're going to go to break now, and we'll be right back on the other side. And then I want to talk more to Claudia about what the EPA is doing in terms of waste. We'll be right back on the other side with our guests, Claudia Fabiano with the EPA and Liz Goodwin with the World Resources Institute. Thank you. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, Central Market, Sunflower Shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more, and we're told with the best Christmas trees in Texas. And our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 40 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. To today's show on the environmental intersection of our consumption-based culture and waste generation, with a focus today on food waste. And I'm going to go back and start this segment with you, Claudia. And I know that your focus is food waste, but what are the main sources and types of waste generated that the EPA deals with, and how do you manage and regulate them?
Sure. Well, as Liz mentioned before, wasted food can be generated at all points along the food supply chain, from farms to manufacturers and processors to grocery stores to restaurants and cafeterias, and not least of all, households. So wasted food includes things like plate waste in homes or restaurants, or unserved buffet trays from hotels or events, truckloads of food that can get rejected by buyers or at ports and borders, or food that did not get sold before it went bad in grocery stores and gets pulled off the shelves and disposed. And those are just a few examples of different types of wasted food from across the supply chain. Our latest estimates show that 66 million tons of wasted food were generated just from the retail, food service, and residential sectors alone.
Is food waste the only waste that the EPA deals with or regulates or anything?
No. In fact, EPA has programs that deal with lots of other materials. We recently put out a draft plastics strategy. We put out a national recycling strategy that dealt with all different kinds of materials. From a regulatory standpoint, you know, EPA doesn't regulate sources of food waste, like as pollutants. EPA obviously has landfill regulations and regulations that would apply to incinerators. But in terms of regulating wasted food directly, that is not something that the federal government does. Waste management decisions in the U.S. are really largely left to states and municipalities, and there's many factors that go into how they would approach that. But you can see a variety. Some states and cities have organic waste bans. So So that means that businesses of a certain size can't send any organic waste, such as food waste, to landfills, and they have to find other ways to minimize what they're creating and how they're managing it, like donation or composting. Mm-hmm. You know, some cities and counties offer curbside food waste collection or food waste drop-off sites. And some states like California have gone further and require a certain percentage of surplus food to be rescued and donated. But really the norm across the country and what's really happening most of the time is food waste ends up combined with other trash and sent to a landfill or an incinerator.
Indeed. And thank you for really helping us understand that the EPA does not regulate food waste or really any kinds of waste. That's more a municipal issue. But are you familiar with, from where you sit at the EPA, any particular locality or examples of places, municipalities that really are doing a really good or innovative job of regulating their waste streams?
Absolutely. I touched on this, but there are some states that have organic landfill bans, which means food waste cannot be sent to landfills. A lot of those tend to apply to larger businesses. Vermont, for example, which I think has about 500,000 people, so it's a small state, but Vermont has taken that organic landfill ban and applied it to households as well. So households cannot send their food waste to landfills in Vermont, and they've got to figure out other ways. They can compost it, and they can learn new ways to prevent it from happening in the first place. So I think Vermont's a really great example of innovative approach that goes all the way through the food supply chain down to households in terms of a regulatory approach.
Does any locality that you might know of do anything as innovative as perhaps have a weekly pickup of food waste or something like that? You know, like here, we get our trash picked up every Tuesday, and we sit out the big thing for the miscellaneous stuff, and then we set out the smaller blue one for recyclables. Yeah, it'd be really cool if we had a little smaller one for food waste.
Yeah, absolutely. There are several municipalities who are doing curbside food waste collection for households. There's also municipalities that offer food waste drop-off sites. In fact, I live in Washington, D.C., so I'll just give that as an example because I know it intimately. We have lots of options here. They started off doing community composting sites at local parks, and that's run by the Department of Parks and Rec, and there's over 50 or 60 of those sites. Anybody can join. You take a one-hour training, and then you become a composter, and you can drop off your food waste anytime. Then they offered food waste drop-off sites at about 8 or 10 different farmers markets across the city. So anybody could come and bring their food waste, and it was taking to get composting. Now, this fall, they've just launched a curbside collection pilot. So each household who joined the pilot was given a kitchen countertop bin to put their food waste in, and then a 5-gallon rodent-proof bin that is collected every week. So you put it out where your trash is. It gets collected once a week. And it's going great so far. These are not at scale, right? This is not available everywhere in the country. There are a limited number of states and municipalities who are doing this, but we're seeing it more and more. We're not seeing it increase at the rate that it needs to, but it is certainly becoming more common.
And of course, my next thing, and then we'll go back to Liz, is how does the EPA Sustainable Management of Food Program support the reduction and prevention of food waste in the U.S.?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one way is federal funding, right? There's infrastructure that needs to be built. There's outreach and education that needs to be done. So EPA received historic amounts of funding through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Inflation Reduction Act. And so with that funding, we established two grant programs. And this is just an example. There's lots of federal money flying out the door right now. But the two grant programs we established in the last year or so are the Solid Waste Infrastructure for Recycling Program and the Recycling Education and Outreach Program. Now, both of these covered many aspects of waste management. They were not just specific to food. However, of the almost $200 million that EPA awarded this fall through these two grant programs, over $83 million of it went to projects that included organics recycling. And most of that went to composting projects, the majority of which included food waste. And these types of awards go to communities, states, territories, and tribes. There's lots of other federal funding going out the door. And I'll just name one more example because it's related to climate specifically. EPA's Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program is awarding about $5 billion to states and municipalities for climate planning and implementation. And addressing food waste can be part of those plans and programs. So we're seeing lots of funding opportunities across the government. And these are really just a few examples. that touch on food waste and can include lots of different things, whether it's outreach and education for prevention or whether it's building out composting or anaerobic digestion infrastructure. But besides federal funding, we also conduct and fund our own research and fund the latest and provide the latest science and data and technical tools to the public and to our stakeholders to help them make decisions while they're developing policies or doing climate planning or building out infrastructure. An example of that is we just published some guidance on how best to manage your food waste, which replaced our old food recovery hierarchy. So it's a new graphic called the Wasted Food Scale, and it updates everything and basically shows what the most preferred to the least preferred management options are for managing food waste. And that was based on a pretty hefty analysis of 11 different methods of managing food waste across 11 different environmental impact categories. And it also included a discussion about those pathways or those management methods' contribution to a circular economy. So we try to put out the latest science so that the people who are making the policies and decisions at the local level have what they need.
So that document that you're talking about, which seems really, really interesting and informative, though, that was aimed at municipalities or professionals or?
Yeah, well, no, not so much consumers. I would say more at, stakeholders in the food supply chain and at local and state governments making these kinds of decisions, making policies, but also at businesses trying to figure out what impact are they trying to minimize, right? What are they focused on? What are the options in their area? Because you're not always going to have the option to donate food everywhere you are. You're not always going to have the option to compost, right? So given what you have, you're able to look at our research and our science and figure out what are the best options in your own context. So it's really aimed at everybody. I think consumers, for the most part, don't have a lot of options. Most of us have three bad options, and that's landfilling, incineration, and sending food waste down the drain. Some of us have composting options or could start backyard composting, but all of us have the option to prevent the amount of waste we're generating. That is an approach that is accessible to everybody.
And it seems like, and that's a purpose of Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, is education of the consumer so that they understand why and what it means to them to eliminate and reduce the food waste. Go ahead, Liz.
Yeah, no, I was just going to build on that because actually the consumers have a huge role to play in this, and I'm sure we can talk about it in the next section. But you know, the average family of four people wastes in excess of $1,600 a year in food, and that so there's a massive incentive, you know, given cost of living pressures, to reduce that food waste.
Thank you for that, because those are the types of things that we believe move people. It moves me knowing that I could recoup, that I could have $1,600 to buy some cool stuff with if I didn't waste so much food. Indeed. We're going to go ahead and go to break now, and we'll be right back on the other side with Liz Goodwin with the World Resources Institute and Claudia Fabiano with the EPA, because I want to talk much more about that $1,600 of wasted money. Thank you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To our show today on environmental intersection of our consumption-based culture and waste generation, focusing in on food waste today. And we are back with Claudia Fabiano with the Environmental Protection Agency and Liz Goodwin with the World Resources Institute. And they really are making us smarter. Right before the break, Liz was telling us that the average household wastes $1,600 in food waste per year. And that's a big amount that we can do lots of things with. How is this affecting our environment and our health?
Well, it's not, as we talked about earlier, it's not good for the environment. It's very damaging in terms of greenhouse gas emissions. It's a waste of water. It's a waste of all the land that was used to produce that food waste. But actually, you know, there's a really good incentive for all of us individually to do something about it because we have the potential to save money. And if we've got tight budgets and tight family budgets, then why not try to save money? The biggest reasons why we as individual householders waste food is because we buy too much, so we don't do enough planning about what food we need, and we don't have enough knowledge about what we've got already. and the secondary. So we buy too much and then we don't use what we buy. So there are some really simple tips for actually helping ourselves to reduce that amount of food waste. First of all is about planning. So, you know, do you write a shopping list before you go shopping? Do you check the cupboards? Do you check your fridge to find out what you've got? And then think about how many meals you're going to need to cook before you next go shopping. And all of those things help you to actually make sure you're buying the right amount. You know, I know that I now have a constantly running shopping list at home when I write down things which I know that I'm going to need next time I go to the shops. So it's about sort of learning some skills around planning. And then it's around making sure that you use what you've bought. So storing things in the right way, you know, starting to store apples in the fridge because they're going to last a lot longer than if you just let them out and they go bad more quickly. So storing things, making sure you're using your freezer well. I know that since I started working on food waste, I started labeling things in my freezer many, many years ago before I really got deeply into food waste. I used to just shove things into the freezer and then a few months later it would come out and I think, what is that? And I think, I don't even know whether it's sweet or savoury. Now I literally label everything before it goes in and I put the date on it so I know how long it's been there and what it is. And also thinking about portion sizes, trying to get the portion sizes right. But if you've got leftovers, well, hey-ho, that maybe gives you a free lunch for tomorrow. So thinking about how you can use up leftovers. So there are all sorts of things we can all do just by being a bit more aware about what we've got and trying not to waste it.
What about health, though? When I go to you, Claudia, what are the health implications of food waste?
Well, I think other than the environmental impacts, which, you know, for example, I mean, when you're sending food to be managed as waste, you've got the impacts coming from the landfills, you've got impacts coming from burning waste at incinerators, right? There's the impacts of the wasted food management. And then Liz has mentioned this as well, all the environmental impacts that, you know, that are a result of all the resources that going into producing our food. So we use fertilizer to produce food. We're using fertilizer to produce food that ends up in a landfill. Those are environmental impacts right there. But on a different level, connecting food waste to healthy diets is, I think, a really interesting thing to think about. Surveys show that the most commonly wasted foods are produce. Vegetables and fruits tend to be the most commonly wasted foods. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, not properly storing things. As Liz discussed, a lot of us are not storing our food the right way. I think there's also an element of, you know, we want to eat healthy food, right? We go and buy the kale and the carrots and the other fresh vegetables, and then we end up ordering takeout because, you know, we're not sticking to our diets and maybe we're overbuying produce and we're hoping we're going to eat it all, but we're never going to get to it, right? So I think there is a connection there because a lot of the food we're seeing being wasted is healthy food, healthy, fresh vegetables and fruit, right? Processed foods that have a 5-year shelf life are not really what's getting wasted at such high rates. So there definitely is a connection there. And I think there's an opportunity for us to really message the idea that by wasting less food, you can also eat healthier, right? Like make sure you're eating the fresh vegetables and fruit that you're buying rather than letting them spoil in your fridge. Not only will you save money and, you know, reduce the impacts on the environment if that food were wasted, but you're also eating healthier food that way. So I think there is a connection there.
Now, we've been primarily talking about consumers, but what about how does this all stack up with restaurants and other food services, other food users other than the end consumer?
Well, I mean, a lot of those restaurants and businesses are running businesses. They are running businesses. So they will often be trying to reduce the wastage in their kitchens. They may be less concerned about the wastage on plates, and they have a huge role to play, actually, in demonstrating good practice, you know, what a good portion size looks like, what a healthy portion size looks like, and helping us as consumers recognize what is a good size portion that we might have, and trying to encourage us not to overorder as well. So I think they have a role to play. But I mean, fundamentally, if they're trying to run a successful business, they're going to be trying to reduce food waste where they can.
So the restaurants or businesses are going to be more price sensitive, perhaps, or more moved by or incentivized by saving dollars to save food.
Yeah, because if they know how much food is being wasted from their kitchens, that's basically food that they could have used and could have made money out of by selling it to us as a meal, but instead it's gone in the trash. So in terms of their financial efficiency of their kitchen and their operations, they'll be quite concerned about that in the kitchen.
Claudia, do you all do anything or have any things that's focused on or for the restaurants and food providers in your sustainable management of food program?
We do have a program called the 2030 Champions, which is aimed at all food businesses, and they can sign up to commit to our national food loss and waste goal to reduce food waste by 50% by 2030. So we hold up those businesses who have committed to that and share examples from their operational practices of the types of things that are working for them. I think on a larger scale, one thing that we all really need to focus on is measurement. Right. A lot of businesses don't necessarily think they're wasting food, and it's because they haven't actually measured it yet. And so that's a really important first step for businesses to take if they're not already doing it. There's lots of tools. I mean, you can start with, Excel. You can do a paper log with a pencil if that's where you're at. I mean, there's also software that helps, cafeterias and restaurants track, for example, what they're throwing away so that they can really understand, where the problem, where are the points that they need to address, and how can they shift operations in a way to help them waste less food, which is going to save money. It's going to save money on purchasing food. It's going to save money on hauling fees because they're paying to discard mm-hmm. the food that they're not using.
What are just a couple of examples of what are some of the innovations or best practices you're seeing out there?
One that immediately comes to mind is this idea of sort of end-of-life markdowns, right? So what that means in a restaurant or retail setting is food that is sort of nearing the end of its freshness, making that at a cheaper price, making that available to the customer for cheaper and letting the customer know either by just a few examples, right? The stores can have a certain section where all of the food that has been marked down because it's kind of nearing its expiration date, or if it's fresh because it's kind of, getting close to needing to be moved out of the store so it gets eaten sooner. You can have a certain section of the store. There's also apps out there. Too Good to Go is an example of one of these types of apps that works with restaurants and retailers. And basically, you as a consumer can look at what's available on this app and see. Basically, it's usually, for example, a bakery, right? When they're ready to close and they've got 35 croissants left that are going to go in the trash, they can offer them to the consumer at a very cheap price. And the consumers can go ahead and pay for that on the app, and they have to go pick it up before closing time. But this is a way where everybody wins, right? Because the food's not getting thrown out. The business is still making some money off of that item. And the consumer is able to obtain food for cheaper. And as long as they eat it, quickly, right, within a couple of days, then it's a win-win for everybody. So I think that's an interesting and innovative idea that I would love to see more of, both in retail and restaurants.
Yeah, I like that idea of the app. I've not heard of it. It doesn't really mean anything, but it's certainly something that I think needs to be advanced, because a lot of people, especially younger people, are using the app. And so to know that type of app is out there, I wonder, have you all, or and this is to you, Liz, too, because one of my questions for you, how you all coordinate and partner with other federal agencies, state and local governments, and then non-governmental organizations to advance waste reduction and sustainability goals. And one of the things that has come to my mind as you were mentioning that app is coordinating or partnering with Uber and Uber Eats and the DoorDash, these food delivery apps. Seems like they might have a role to play in this also. We're going to go ahead and go to break right now, but on the other side, I want to talk more about this and partnering with others, with both of you all. We'll be right back on the other side. We're going to go to break now, but we'll be back to talk more with Liz Goodwin with the World Resources Institute and Claudia Fabiano with the EPA. Thank you all. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, all natural grocers, all central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens. Serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more, and we're told the best Christmas trees in Texas. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 40 years, non-mercury, with a holistic approach, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today, to our show on the environmental intersection of our consumption-based culture and waste generation, as we focus in today on food waste, which is one of the most considerable portions of our various waste streams. And we are back with Claudia Fabiano with the EPA and Dr. Liz Goodwin with the World Resources Institute. And before the break, we were talking about partnering with other federal agencies, state and local governments, and non-governmental organizations to advance waste reduction. And that was on the tails, as we had mentioned, apps, which has gotten my attention. Claudia mentioned apps. And it just comes to my mind that has anybody ever tried to partner with DoorDash and Uber Eats and any of the food apps, Claudia?
No, I'm not totally sure. I do think there have been some of those partnerships, at least on a local level or on a more temporary basis. One interesting partnership that does come to mind in that vein is I just recently found out that a food rescue organization was partnering with the Washington Area Bicycle Association to get cyclists to rescue food on their bicycles. And I thought that was a really interesting partnership. But I think a lot of these partnerships are really happening more on a local level, because the issue of food waste, a lot of it is it's being managed locally, right? Whether it's being rescued locally for donation, or whether it's being composted locally or regionally. So I think a lot of these types of partnerships are something we're seeing a little bit more on the local or regional level.
I completely agree with that. I mean, there are lots of examples of local arrangements being formed between maybe a local branch of a retailer and food banks locally, because they've got to talk to each other locally. One of the biggest reasons why we end up with food waste up and down the supply chain is because there's a lack of communication and a lack of partnerships. And a lack of awareness how one person's decision can impact on somebody else. So actually, by promoting and encouraging of that sharing of knowledge and communication up and down the chain is a way of helping to reduce food waste. But there are examples of restaurants partnering with things like apps and with food banks, just as a way of making sure that food doesn't actually end up going in the bin. And then they also talk further back up their supply chain so that they have better information about, oh, we think we might not need all of that order, or we might need more than that order. And so being able to tune the supply chain up and down so that the food doesn't end up coming through the chain too quickly and ending up being wasted.
Let me ask you this, though, Liz. What was the impact of the COVID pandemic on food waste?
Well, it was a whole mixture of things. At certain levels, it caused massive disruption in supply chains. So all of a sudden, the hospitality sector fell over. And so all the markets that there were supply chains that were just focused on getting to the hospitality sector, and they suddenly had no market. And so you saw milk being poured down drains. You saw animals being slaughtered. The supply chains weren't able to adapt quickly enough. But then on a different level, certainly in the UK, there was clear evidence that household food waste really went down significantly during COVID, because everyone was at home, everyone was able to plan, everyone was cooking together. You knew exactly how many people were going to be in for a meal because nobody was going out. And so there was a big reduction in household food waste during COVID. And then as soon as we came out of lockdown, it started going back up again. So there were some benefits and some downsides. I think the food system, as a result of COVID, has learned a lot of lessons. And if something awful like that happened again, markets would be able to adapt more quickly. But yes, I mean, COVID wasn't good, overall, but the other aspect that COVID had was that it took everybody's attention off the issue of food waste, because we were all focused on trying to find a solution to get vaccines and roll out vaccines. And so businesses' awareness and attention on food waste went down.
Claudia, what do you all at the EPA see there, though, in terms of COVID's effect on food waste and waste generation as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think largely I agree with Liz. I mean, in terms of the research that we've seen about COVID, I think, you know, at the beginning, there was the issue of the panic shopping where everybody stocked up because they just didn't know what was going to happen and wanted to make sure they had enough. But I think after that sort of evened out and we learned, you know, what it was like to sort of stay at home, and we understood the grocery stores were going to have items in stock, you know, people made some good habits, right? They shopped more appropriately. Their life was maybe a little more predictable, right? There weren't random times they were just going to go to a restaurant instead of eat at home, because that wasn't really an option. So I think we're seeing, you know, that there were some good habits adopted. I think post-pandemic, not that we're done with the pandemic, but we're back to more of our pre-pandemic lifestyle. So I think we're seeing the amounts of food being wasted kind of go back to that average. But I don't think we've totally seen all the research yet to understand what the long-term effects might be. Again, if people remember their habits that they had when they were on lockdown, that could be a really good thing if those types of behavior changes stick.
And as we get further and further from the COVID pandemic, I think there are a lot of things that are being seen that were perhaps good things or beneficial things that happened during that. And I think you mentioned that, you know, people develop better habits. The challenge is for us to keep those better habits or those habits to stick.
Can I just say,
certainly,
there are other things. So, you know, you had COVID and that had some impact, but then you get a war in Ukraine and a war in Gaza, and they send massive shocks through the food system as well. You then get escalation in cereal prices, and that causes shortages in cereal. And so there are all sorts of things that are always happening to the food system. So we need to make sure that our food system is resilient and robust and can withstand these shocks.
That really, I want to talk about that more too, starting with Claudia, and then we'll have Liz weigh in. And that is the security of our food system. And how does that intersect with our consumption patterns and food waste patterns?
I mean, I think when there's consumer perception that something is available today, but it might not be available tomorrow, you can certainly see people stocking up on things. I don't know that we're seeing that much of that in the U.S. at the moment. I think what we've largely really been seeing is the effects of increased food prices. People are more and more concerned about how much food costs. They're not able to necessarily buy what they could a few years ago with the same amount of money, relatively. And so, you know, I think people are having to make different choices. We're also seeing more and more reliance on food banks, right? All of the COVID, you know, federal money has been spent and is gone. And now we're seeing rising rates again of food insecurity, because a lot of that assistance was temporary. So there's a huge demand for food assistance in the U.S. right now, and it's very worrisome. It really shows what federal funding in that area can do.
At one point, there was some actual insecurity or perceived insecurity when the Ukraine war broke out, because I'm told, and I, like many, didn't know that they were our wheat basket of sorts. And so with the same thing with the issues in Israel and Palestine, are they causing any food insecurity issues, Liz? What have you seen there?
It's less of a direct impact, because in Ukraine you had the issue of the grain couldn't get out of Ukraine. So as you say, it was the breadbasket of the world in many respects. But so you get less happening with the Gaza war, but that is causing different problems. So it causes an escalation in oil prices, and that then feeds through to the food system. So even though, you know, Gaza, Israel, that area doesn't produce vast amounts of food, the impact it has on global stability, the price of oil and things like that, then has an indirect effect on the food system.
Again, it's all connected and it's certainly complex. We just have a couple of minutes to go. Claudia, can you tell us what ordinary people in their everyday lives can best do, or how they can be most effective at reducing food waste and waste generation?
Sure. Well, I think we really need to to shift our mindset away from abundance and from the idea that it's always better to have extra, even if that extra ends up in the trash can. So we've touched on some of this, but I think one of the maybe easiest behavior changes for people to adopt is storing food in better ways. So a lot of us don't know how to store food properly, and it's not our fault. We don't teach this stuff in school anymore. Stores don't always sell food in the packaging that it should be stored in. So for example, when you go to buy herbs, you buy a bunch of cilantro or a bunch of parsley, you probably take it home in one of those, you know, small produce bags, plastic bags. You get home, you put it in a drawer, or maybe you don't even put it in a drawer, and it's mushy a few days later. And that's because the way we're taking the food home from the store is not the way we should be storing it. We should actually be storing our herbs like you would store flowers, in a jar with water in the fridge, and they will last forever. Try it.
Thank you.
You know, there's little shifts like that if you learn it once, it's not hard to adopt that habit, but you have to have the knowledge. And we're not always given that knowledge. I think, you know, even the way that our refrigerators are designed are not necessarily intuitive and don't lead to people storing food in the best ways. And that's not our fault, right? But it looks like you maybe should store milk in the door, and you shouldn't, because that's the warmest place of the refrigerator. So you should be storing milk in the middle on one of the shelves. I think we also largely don't know what the two drawers are for. What's a crisper drawer? What's high humidity? What's low humidity? So there's all these things that are part of our kind of built environment that we don't have control over, but that are also leading to food waste. But I think in terms of what people can do, storage is really one of the easiest things. And then really shopping mindfully, making a list, making sure that you check your refrigerator and your pantry and your freezer before you go out and buy, and think about what might come up that week, right? If you know that every week you end up going out to dinner or getting takeout or being invited to a neighbor's house once or twice a week, then don't buy food for 7 days. Buy food for 5 days.
Indeed.
That's going to be enough.
And Liz, last word, just a few seconds too, in terms of what folks can, ordinary people in everyday lives can best do. And education has just in this show become a big deal. How can we get more of that to happen?
Well, I think encourage schools to do more, but also encourage local groups. You know, if you've got, local groups, youth clubs and things like that, or holiday clubs in the holidays, let's find ways of encouraging them to understand where their food comes from. I think that's one of the issues, is that we don't really understand where our food comes from. Some children have never seen a farm where their food comes from, and they therefore have no way of making that association. So let's find ways of introducing our children to, you know, where the food comes from, so that we start to value it. Because we've got to get to the point where food is a precious resource.
Food, water, and air, it's right up there. Thank you all so much. You've really made us smarter. And thank you, audience, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but our goal is for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of those tiny acts can seem insignificant, but all of them add up, one way or the other, to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you for listening in today, and join us again next week for more on the environmental and health intersection with food waste and waste management. Thank you.